It's been my privilege for many years to adopt a theme verse and a focus to guide us through a particular year. This year is no different. I like to think that God directs me to a specific kind of a verse and theme that is appropriate and to our Bible Fellowship Church here of Newark in any particular year. And again, I think this year is no different. I'm going to focus on our theme for 2020 for the next several weeks today and two more weeks before we return to complete our study in the book of Isaiah, which, Lord willing, we'll complete by Easter. That's the plan. We make our plans, God orders our steps. The 2019 theme, as it was focused on that book of Isaiah, certainly remains pertinent, as quite frankly all the themes do. They don't just sort of cease at the December 31st, but the thoughts and the emphases certainly can carry through. But our theme for 2019, as you know, has been walking in the light of the God's supreme glory, casting down every idol of our hearts, relying fully upon Him, and embracing our kingdom inheritance in Christ Jesus. Certainly that continues on, as I pray, a part of our hearts entering this new year. But as many of you know, it's no secret that the Bible Fellowship Church of Newark is entering a season of transitions, a season of change, admittedly very significant ones, as part of those changes involve leadership transitions. But I am confident, and I hope you are as well, that God is, and He will orchestrate these changes for His good purposes. At a congregational meeting early last year, the elders sought to inform this church family of the process that we are engaging in to move forward, and as much as possible to provide a timeline. But really, by necessity, both the process and the timeline are flexible. But rest assured, plans are in motion. And I know people are responding to those in different ways. And we want to set a tone at the beginning of this year that we would respond in a way that honors God and builds one another up. We'll again have a significant time set aside in an upcoming congregational meeting to update the church family of where we are currently in this process and timeline. What's already transpired, some things you may be aware of, other things maybe not. Where we currently are, for instance, in our search for a director of music or worship and music ministries, as well as to bring into sharper focus, sort of sharpening that lens and that focus of the rest of 2020 with these leadership transitions that at least now we see on the horizon wherever they may be. But I want to identify, before we go any further, I believe there are a number of biblical realities that if we are going to walk this journey together in a way that honors God and builds one another up, that we've got to embrace these biblical realities. Let me share them with you. Changes, transitions, are by their very nature challenging. Changes and transitions, often by their very nature, are challenging. There's always that factor of the unknown. Stretches us out of our comfort zone, which often leads to what we might call the fear factor, or maybe the angst factor, or let's be biblical and say the concern factor. You know, we don't worry, we're just filled with concern. Joshua chapter 3 and verse 4, when Israel is crossing the Jordan en route to the promised land, they were reminded that you may know the way you shall go. For you have not passed this way before. Indeed, with changes, with transitions, we acknowledge it involves new paths, it involves new directions, new experiences, new ways that we've not experienced before, perhaps. Some maybe have, but not everyone. And again, these can often come with concerns and a measure of angst. A second reality I think we've got to embrace as a congregation is that families of all kinds learn to persevere through transitions and changes while encouraging one another and loving one another throughout. There are changes and transitions that we readily welcome into a family. And by the way, this focus and theme for the year has two prongs to it, and I always want you to remember that. It's got the individual prong. That is, God working in our hearts as individuals, as followers of Jesus Christ, our personal lives, our families. But also, the second prong is our church. Our church family, the Bible Fellowship Church of Newark, and the church as a body walking this path together. So those two prongs I want always to be in our minds, and I hope I set the tone that way this morning. But there are transitions and changes that we would readily welcome in a family. Children going off to college, getting married, having kids, desired job transitions, a young woman going into the army and entering an exciting new phase. Again, are there concerns? Pray for mom and dad, you know, as they launch their daughter off into this new adventure. But they're welcome changes. They're a part of normal, healthy growth in a life. But then there are those changes and transitions that are not so readily welcomed. A serious physical diagnosis, a relationship that ends, a loved one dies, perhaps a season of extended unemployment, or a child walks a wayward path, and the list can go on. But in all of these, healthy families, whether it be personal families or whether it be a church family, they learn to come together, and they learn to hold one another up and encourage one another and persevere while encouraging and loving one another along the way. A third biblical reality that I believe we must embrace is the reminder that Jesus Christ is the head of his church. Church universal, and I'm convinced the local church as well, including the Bible Fellowship Church of Newark. And as has already been referenced this morning, he's already there at the end of where this path will lead. He's already there, and how grateful we are for that. The same can be said for your personal family. As you're seeking to follow Jesus Christ and you've made Jesus Christ the head of your home, indeed know that he's leading you as well. He's the head of your family. This church belongs to him. We're stewards. We're managers of what he's entrusted to us. The same is true with our personal families. As parents who know and love Jesus, if God has given to us children, we long ago dedicated our children to the Lord, acknowledging that we don't own them. In fact, the 18 years perhaps that we have them under our roof and the times that our influence is most maximized goes very quickly. And God has entrusted us with the privilege and responsibility to nurture them in his truth. And then there's another reality I believe we need to embrace, and it's this, that God is the sovereign Lord who rules over all changes and all transitions in life. He's the Lord of change. He's the Lord of transition. In fact, he's the God of transitions and changes as evidenced throughout the biblical record. And we'll look at some of those. He orchestrates our changes. Thanks be to God all the time while being the one who never changes. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. One of my favorite anthems that we sing here, as the songwriter depicts, all my changes come from him, he who never changes. I'm held firm in the grasp of the rock of all the ages. All is well with my soul. He is God in control. I know not all his plans, but I know I'm in his hands. What great biblical truth that we get to sing and cling to in that song. And the last biblical reality I simply mention is that God has only good plans for his people, for those who belong to him by faith, who've been bought with the blood of his son, Jesus Christ. It's only good plans. And again, whether that's as an individual in your life, as a family, or whether it's our church family here at Bible Fellowship Church of Newark. And that brings us to our 2020 theme verse and focus. I've selected Jeremiah 29 and verse 11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, Yahweh, Jehovah. Plans for welfare, for well-being, for peace, not for calamity, to give you a future and a hope. And then our focus that tends to take it a little bit further and identify some things, our focus, this, I've included it in your bulletin. in our lives, again, personally, and in our church family, discovering with expectation. We're going to discover some things this coming year, a path that's going to be unfolding, and then embracing with joy as God unfolds that for us, and then following by faith the good plans of our faithful and sovereign God in 2020 and beyond. Let me say it again. In our lives and in our church, discovering with expectation, embracing with joy, and following by faith the good plans of our faithful and sovereign God in 2020. This morning, we're going to see the heart of God. His heart is filled with only good plans and purposes for his people. We'll look at that heart this morning. Next week, we're going to see the human obstacles that we often encounter in the midst of changes. Obstacles we see in the biblical record, even in those changes that God brought about that are recorded in Scripture. And then thirdly, 2 weeks from today, we'll wrap it up seeing the often surprising ways of God. The ways of God that are often unexpected, and yet always purposeful. So let's dive into Jeremiah chapter 29 and verse 11 today. My message this morning is entitled, God's Good Plans for His People. We'll see the heart of God this morning. This verse, I know, is a very familiar verse to many. It's a well-loved verse. It's an often quoted verse. It's a verse that often hangs on someone's wall in a frame. But we've got to be very careful not to lift biblical promises out of context for our present-day purposes. And I have prayed, God, don't let me do that. And I will trust my elders and all of you to be that one who would keep me in check there. But I've sought by the Spirit of God that we want to present this in a biblical appropriate way. And so this morning I want to examine this verse in its context. And yes, I do want to draw out what I believe are biblically appropriate applications that are for us today in our personal lives and as well in our church family. This verse that we're looking at, Jeremiah 29:11, actually ties closely to Isaiah, the book that we've been studying for almost the last year, because this promise was given by God to the Jewish people when they were living in captivity in that pagan nation of Babylon. This was a captivity that would last for 70 years. This was a captivity that was the result of their own rebellion and disobedience to God. This was a captivity that was not punitive out of his anger, but rather restorative out of his grace, which is the way God works always with his children. And ties to Isaiah, because this is the very captivity that Isaiah was prophesying was going to come to the nation of Judah as we've been looking at that book. So, to begin, when this promise was given, the Jewish people were confused. Quite frankly, they were hopeless as they looked at their current situation and even as they looked ahead as far as they could see. How could they have ended up in Babylon? What in the world went wrong? How could they have been uprooted from everything they knew, everything they held dear, everything they loved, everything they were comfortable with, and everything that they thought would never change? You know how that goes. Well, there's changes that come into our lives. We never dreamed we've experienced those kinds of things. Same was true of the people of God. The question was raised. My goodness, had God truly forgotten them? Had God forsaken them? Of course, the answer is no, because he never leaves us nor forsakes us as his children. But God did do the unexpected. He landed his people smack dab in the middle of a pagan nation who had no regard for God, and they were in captivity. Not for a year or two, but 70 years. God did the unexpected. Even though Isaiah was prophesying it all along, still, for the people of God, they were surprised when they ended up in Babylon. But you know what? God also did the expected. He was faithful to his promises and to his people. We can always expect that from God because that's the heart of God. God uses the unexpected in our lives. God uses change in our lives to draw us to a deeper dependence upon Him. God uses the unexpected, that in this case, that which is not real welcome, He uses that which crashes into our lives, and He uses it to develop in us a greater trust in Him. He uses the change, the unexpected that comes into our lives, to develop in our hearts a purer love for Him. Earlier this past year, I read a quote that resonated with my heart so much so that I immediately wrote it down on a sticky note, stuck it on my credenza, and I have thought of it often. I've included it in the bulletin there in that box of our theme and focus. Look for the hand of God on the seas of change. Look for the hand of God on the seas of change. So often when change comes into our lives, we are so consumed with what is swirling around, and we're trying to get our head wrapped around it, trying to figure out how to make sense out of things, trying to figure out how to address it. We forget to see the times the hand of God that's working amidst those circumstances. You've heard me say often, in the brokenness of this world, things happen. God is Lord over all of these things. But in the brokenness of this world, we need to keep our eyes tuned and focused to be able to see evidences of the grace of God in the midst of the brokenness. And if we're having our eyes open, we'll see them often. But I pray this coming year, as families, as individuals, as a church, look for the hand of God on the seas of change. Because change isn't necessarily bad. God uses it for His good purposes in all of our lives, as individuals and as a church. The trap the Jews fell prey to was to be consumed with their current circumstances, and they were rough circumstances. This isn't minimizing the challenges they had there in Babylon. But the Jews fell prey to be consumed with their current circumstances rather than being consumed with the goodness and grace of God's hand at work, even through those dire circumstances. They were more disturbed by the heat of their situation than they were delighted by the heart of their God. When the Israelites were on the threshold of entering the promised land, they were directed to send 12 spies to check out the land. You recall, perhaps, 10 of those spies came back overwhelmed, consumed with the obstacles that were before them. The cities are too fortified. The people are too big. We can never go up there and take those people. 2 men came back, saw the same things, saw the same fortified cities, saw the same giants, but they had their eyes focused and were consumed with the greatness of their God. And Joshua and Caleb said, "Let's go take that land as God leads the way." They trusted God and they acted appropriately. Well, let me identify very quickly 3 aspects of this verse. Number 1, God has a plan for His children. God has a plan for His children. We as parents have plans for our kids. They don't always work out, but we have plans for our kids. God has a plan for His children. First part of that verse, "For I know the plans I have for you," declares, I like that, declares, certifies, trumpets forth the Lord, Yahweh, Jehovah. That name for God is the name of a covenant-making and a covenant-keeping God, the God of relationship, the God who sought us out and made provision for us to be in relationship with Him, entered into a covenant. It's this God, the covenant-making, covenant-keeping God, who says, "I have plans for you, and I know the plans I have for you." Another translation conveys the idea of knowing the thoughts that I think of you. It's an amazing thing, the God of the universe, and yet He's big enough and small enough that He thinks of us intimately and intricately. When you love someone, your thoughts are constantly upon them. Thoughts of that person you love fill your mind, and so are you, if you belong to God by faith in Jesus Christ, so are you on the mind and in the heart of God. God has a plan for you. That is, he does have thoughts of you. You're in his mind and plan. I couldn't help but think of Psalm 33. I love that psalm. It begins declaring, God, you're the creator of the universe. You're Lord of it all. You've spoken the worlds, the universe into existence. And then it goes on to say, Lord, you are sovereign over all the nations of this world. And then it goes on to say, Lord, you are ruler over all mankind. You see all mankind. But, verse 18, the eyes of the Lord are on those who fear him. On those whose hope is in his steadfast love. I love that. That with all of the grandeur of our God, and yet his eyes are focused on you, his heart, his thoughts, our personal thoughts. For Israel, God's thoughts were upon them. Even if they didn't think so, he had a plan for them. That plan was indeed to bring them out of captivity, to restore them to their land. It would be in his time, in his way. It would be 70 years until they would be restored to their land, and it would come through a very unexpected way. It would come through a king, Cyrus, a pagan king. Isaiah's already predicted him. He wasn't even born yet when Isaiah predicted this king, Cyrus, would be the instrument through which God would lead his people back to their homeland. God had a plan, and he brought that plan to perfect fruition. You know, there's a key truth, though, I think we need to remember when going through seasons of change. It's this, Proverbs 16:9, the heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. Make no mistake, we've made plans. Make no mistake, your elders have been working hard in this past year, and plans have been made, plans have been changed, and they'll continue to do, but we're very grateful that it's the Lord who establishes our steps. And we're grateful that we can have that confidence. I can't help but think of Isaiah 55, 8 and 9, words that are relevant. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. But just what does that mean? His ways are higher, his thoughts are higher than our ways and our thoughts. Let me give you a few ideas there. Number one, it means that his thinking and plans and purposes are not limited like ours. Again, we can't see past the next minute. God sees the end from the beginning. God is the Alpha and the Omega. We can't see what lies ahead, but God knows. What a difference that makes. How sweet it would be, or at least we think it would be sweet, if we'd know what would happen in this next year. If we could lay out with firm confidence, this is where we'll be on December 31st, 2020. We can't do that. We make plans. We have expectations. But God knows. And God's already there. We think it would be sweet to know the outcome of our lives the next year, the next 5 years, the 10 years. But we don't know. We can't know. We think it's sweet. It really wouldn't be. But God knows. And God is orchestrating his plan in our lives. It also means, for his thoughts higher and ways higher than ours, that his purposes go beyond our present physical comfort. That's what we're always focused on. Get me out of this jam. Take this pain away from me. Fix this problem. But God's purposes go beyond our present physical comfort to our spiritual and our eternal well-being. Oh, he's got such a much bigger perspective than we do. Again, he's not bound by time like we are. It also means that God knows his plans for us even when we don't have a clue as to what he's doing in our current situation. And let's face it, there are times we look around and say, God, what are you up to? Why in the world is it such a mess right now? Charles Spurgeon gave this illustration. The child playing on the deck of an ocean liner does not understand the tremendous engine whose beat is the throbbing heart of that stately ship. And yet all is safe. For that child, for the engineer, the captain, the pilot are in their places and well know what is being done. So let not that child on the deck trouble himself about things too great for him. God has a plan for you. God has a plan for you, and he's working that plan to perfection for his glory and our good. Secondly, God's plans for his children are altogether and always good. Verse goes on to say, my plans for your welfare and not for calamity, plans for good, not disaster, some translations, plans for well-being and not trouble. I want to give two quick cautions here. We need to make sure that our definition of good, or that which pertains to our welfare and well-being, align with God's perspective. Very important, or we're going to be way off base. Secondly, as I've already alluded to, we must be careful of misappropriating a promise for our purposes today. That's the fallacy of the prosperity gospel, as it's been come to be called. Taking promises like this one and others and redefining the concept of good, or that which is for our welfare, and redefining it from our human vantage point and misappropriating a promise. They redefine good, or that which is for our welfare, to be no heartache, no hardships, that God promises his children will always be healthy and wealthy. That's God's will for all of us. That God becomes not much more than a genie in a bottle. That God is at your every whim to give you what you want and think you need. That's taking a promise. It's misappropriating it. It's redefining a term from our perspective and not in a biblical way. Think about Joseph. Do you think Joseph, when he was in that unjust imprisonment, thought anything would be good about that? Or think about Moses. Did he view his years in the land of Egypt under the heavy-handed burden of the Egyptians as something good at the time? Or think about the Jewish people, the people of God. Did they view their captivity in Babylon as something good at the time? Or think about the disciples. When they viewed their Jesus hanging on a cross, dying, how could they even conceive that there was anything remotely good about what was happening there? Of course not. This verse is not to be quoted as a divine rabbit's foot. This morning or this afternoon, I ask you to think of your present circumstances. Think of that which is in your life that you never would have chosen to be a part of your journey, but it's there because God has orchestrated it into your life. God has woven it into your life. Think about what that may be, or several things. You say, Pastor Bill, how can you say that what I'm thinking about right now, how can you say that such of what is going on in my life is remotely good? I can't. But God can. And he does. But it's only good because of the purposes of God that he desires to produce through his plan. It's only good because of the purposes he produces in our lives. He desires that he might produce good fruit in our lives, in the lives of others. I think of Romans 8, 28 and 29, a verse that we ought not just bring out whenever we talk to somebody who's just had a crisis, by the way. There's a place for that truth, obviously, but there's a time and an appropriate way to set that truth before people. But you know the verse, for we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who are called according to his purpose, to those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And the next verse speaks about a part of that purpose being conformed into the likeness of Jesus, his son. What a promise God gives to us. But there's that word good. It has to do with God's eternal purposes in our lives, not merely the absence of conflict or the absence of heartache in our lives. In all things, we can confidently say God desires to make us more like Christ. In all things, we can confidently say God wants to refine our faith and our dependence upon him. In all things, we can confidently say that God wants us to seek him with all of our heart and not the idols that we so often run to for comfort. In all things, we can confidently say that God desires to prepare our hearts to minister to others with the same ministry that we've received from him. In all things, we can confidently say that God wants us to come to know him like never before. In all things, this we do know. If God is for us, and he is, then who can be against us? If God is for us, who can be against us? What shall we fear? God's plans and desires for us are not for calamity. I think about that word calamity as destructive chaos, you know. It's not for calamity, not for any type or any semblance of evil against us. His plans for you are never to beat you down, never to mess you up, never to bring destructive chaos, never to discourage you or to put you in a pit and never let you out. That's not the heart of God. Even though sometimes we feel that's where we are. He's working his plans, even when it looks like we are walking in darkness of the unknown and the uncertain, God is always orchestrating his plan in his light. Thirdly, God has plans for his people. God's plans are always and altogether good. And thirdly, God's plans are always hope-filled. That is, God's plans are always directed toward hope and not despair. So the end of that verse, to give you a future and a hope, the phrase carries the concept that God will give to you an expected end. So this isn't some vague promise, but rather it's a focused end that God will bring about. I would say it this way: God has an end game for each of you. God has an end game for us as a church, and there will be nothing that will thwart him accomplishing and bringing to fruition his end game. Of course, God has revealed his ultimate end game for the one who belongs to him by faith. That is a place in the kingdom that he's going to establish upon this earth. God has given to us the end game when he says that we are going to be in the presence of Jesus, the presence of God through all of eternity in that new heavens and new earth. The end game that we're going to come in that time of our life when Jesus comes back and establishes and makes all things new, and all of what has been right will be made, all of what has been wrong will be made right, and things will be made whole. And all those frustrations and questions and all those issues will fall by the wayside when we look in the beauty of Jesus' face. But what about before I get to heaven? What about before? Does this have any pertinence, relevance to me before I get to heaven? What can I expect from God in my present situation? How does hope, a plan, future and a hope, how does it fit what I'm dealing with today, what I'm going to wake up with tomorrow? Is it appropriate? Is it something I can cling to? Consider the Jews in Babylon again. You know, some of those Jews never did experience the return to their homeland. Some of those Jews died in Babylon. Does that mean God's plan and purposes failed? No. But you know, I wish I could promise you that God's end game for you involved the full resolution of your current situation just the way you want it to be fixed. How I wish I could promise you that. That would be fixed, and it would be fixed sooner rather than later. But I can't promise you that. You know why? Because God doesn't promise you that. But God's at work. We sang earlier, these troubles will come to an end. But until they do, still, I will sing your praise. That's what God desires from us. So where does hope fit in? You see, for some, God's deliverance, his earthly end game, will not mean full deliverance out of or from a trial in your lifetime. We don't like to hear that, but that's reality. We know that. Think about Paul and his thorn in the flesh. He begged God, God, take this away. Please, dear God, remove this from me. Whatever it was a real hindrance to him. Many would say it was some physical issue. But whatever it was, Paul begged God to take it away. And God said, no. I'm not going to deliver you from that. But what did he say? I will deliver you through that. I will sustain you. And I will use that thorn in your flesh in significant ways in your life to accomplish what I desire to accomplish in you for my glory and your good and ultimately the building up of the Church of Jesus Christ. So how does this translate to the hope that this verse talks about? Can we have and confidence that God has a future and a hope for us even today? I believe absolutely so. You see, our hope is found in Christ, to whom we belong by faith and who belongs to us. Our hope is found in this indwelling Christ, the Spirit of Christ, and his promises and his provisions. Our hope is found in his personal presence with us, in us, through this life, to be all that we need as we rest in him. Our hope is found in his purposes that are accomplished through hardship and heartache. It's not health and wealth prosperity gospel, my friend, but it is the biblical gospel. Look at what the next verse says as I wind this down. Then you will call upon me and come to me and pray to me and I will hear you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Again, very specific in the context of the people who are in captivity in Babylon. But it's always true, my friend, no matter what age, no matter what season, it's always true. Seasons of change, hardship, joy, challenges in facing the unknown that these things bring, we must seek God. We're called to seek God as he delights in being found. What does that mean? I believe it means that he delights to be known more intimately and more deeply than ever before. So we seek him when facing cancer. We must seek him when you've lost a loved one. Seek him when a relationship has failed. Seek him in job uncertainty. Seek him when dealing with chronic pain. Seek him when you're weary from caring for someone 24/7. Seek him when financial crisis hits. Go deep with God. It's always right to seek God. It's always right to go deep with God, to learn greater dependence upon him, to trust him more deeply, to love him with a purer love, to understand more fully that Jesus is all that we need, that his grace is sufficient. Proverbs 4:18 says, the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day. What is dark to you today, always remember, is light to the Lord. The psalmist said, if I say, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day to you, for darkness is as light with you. Psalm 139, 11 and 12. Some of you are walking in darkness today, humanly speaking. That darkness is not dark to God. Even the darkness, from our vantage point, is light to God. I'm going to close with a reading from a blog from a young man, a young believer, who writes a blog. He's a young man from Nigeria. Perhaps these thoughts will resonate with you as they did with me. While most people talk about New Year goals and resolutions, very few ever talk about New Year fears. Maybe the air that accompanies the New Year is so thick with optimism it allows no space for fears or worries, or maybe there are no fears at all, but I have goals and I have fears. I'm an optimist, I'm optimistic, but I also have worries. For me, every new year brings uncertainty. Isn't that the truth? 2020 is no different, individually as a church. Before me lies 12 unwrapped boxes containing the expected and the unexpected, the good and the bad, the victories and the defeats, the joys and the sorrows, and I'll get to open these boxes one after the other, not knowing what to expect. In the past year, many of these same boxes brought disappointment, it brought sadness. Many of my plans failed before the first half of the year had gone by, so it's not surprising that I enter the new year with some questions, some worries, and yes, even some fear. He goes on to write, so I look at 2020 with thoughtful eyes and I wonder, in the midst of all the questions and needless worrying, the words of Jesus to his disciples in Mark 4 had never sounded so true to me. He said to them, why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? I was studying my Bible a few days back, and that curt reprimand jumped straight at me. Young man's name is Eliezer. Have you still no faith, Eliezer? The disciples had been with Jesus for a while and were supposed to know better. They had seen water turned to wine. They had seen the sick healed. They'd walked with him. They labored with him. But when the time came for them to trust him for their very survival, in the midst of a raging storm, it became clear that they had very little faith. In fact, in this instance, we're told they had no faith. In many ways, I'm like the disciples, and so are we. I've seen him in his word, seen him in my life. I've been blessed by him. I've told others of his faithfulness. I've spoken of his sovereignty and unchanging resolve to do his people good. But when it comes to the issues of my own life, daily matters. I often find myself having little faith. I often fall short of the very virtues and qualities I've admonished others to imbibe. Yes, I really do need constant reminders as I go through life, and so do we. God will take care of you. He will uphold you and strengthen you to fight life's toughest battles. You can trust Him. You can hold on to Him. I can easily forget these things, and I shouldn't, but too easily I do fall into discouragement, even despair, because I forget them. But I thank God for His Word, His constant reminders to me that my fears and my worries, while maybe legitimate, are not necessary. I know I'll be fine. God's got me. We sang that today. He'll never, ever let me go. Thanks be to God. So I close with these challenges. Launching into 2020, let's acknowledge the unknown. I talked about this way back in our congregational meeting back in February. Let's acknowledge the unknown. Let's not pretend there's not concerns that come with that, the challenges that come with it. Let's acknowledge it. Let's be real about them. And let's be honest about those challenges that we're presently facing as a church, not just out there, but what we're presently facing. Let's not minimize the issues we face as a church today. Let's not dismiss them or pretend that everything's perfect here when we know it's not. We're a church made up of sinners. Your leaders are sinners. By the grace of God, we seek to lead well. We seek to lead with integrity, but we're not perfect. We fail. And there are issues that your elders are addressing, have been addressing for the last 12 months, even long before that. Sometimes solutions come, other times they don't. Other times they're very hard to come by. Oh, how we covet your prayers for wisdom. But let's not minimize or dismiss or pretend it's perfect, but let's, at the same time, let's maximize the greatness and goodness and sovereignty and faithfulness of our God, who's got us in His hands and He'll never let us go. And He's got good purposes for us as individuals and as a church. Let's seek God with all of our heart in these important days. Let's collectively, desperately seek Him and His wisdom to let Him know how serious we are, that we desire to walk in His ways, we desire to know His will, and then follow it by faith. We desire to discover His path with expectation, to embrace it with joy as He unfolds it, and to follow it by faith. We're going to be calling this congregation to pray very specifically, very intentionally in these days to come. And finally, let's purpose to walk this journey together. Let's not be at each other. Let's walk this journey together. With a unity of heart, with a oneness of heart, with a unity of desire, and with a singleness of purpose, that as we call upon God, we can have a confidence in Him that the Bible Fellowship Church of Newark's best days are yet ahead. And He's got good plans for us. As Ephesians 3 reminds us, that He desires to do that which is abundantly above and beyond, that which we can ask or imagine. That's the God we serve. That's the God we desire to follow. He leadeth me. Oh, blessed thought. Whatever I do, wherever I be, still it's God's hand that leadeth me. Lord, I would clasp Thy hand in mind, content whatever lot I see, since 'tis God's hand that leadeth me. Oh, He leadeth me, He leadeth me. By His own hand He leadeth me. His faithful follower I would be, for by His hand He leadeth me. I hope you believe that this morning. I hope you believe it for your life, for that of your loved ones and family. I hope you believe it for that of this church, because He does lead us with a faithful hand. Ron, come and lead us, would you please?